Welcome to the Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Gadel, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Paris, coming to you live from the home studio in Paris of the South, Asheville, North Carolina. Happy Easter, Matt. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. Happy Easter, indeed. We made it. You made it, preacher. Although you're listening, when you're listening to this, you probably haven't made it yet, but you're going to make it. You're almost there.
Yeah. You got a whole week, likely, if I get this podcast up on time.
You got a whole week. What are we checking in on? Are we checking in on our Kate Middleton watch? I heard she's going to come out at Easter.
Oh, yeah. Her Kate Middleton was going to come out. There is video, Matt. You've probably seen it. Of Kate Middleton emerging from the tomb to go to some shops. That's S-H-O-P-P-E, S, apostrophe S, because that's how they spell it there. Some people were saying she's not walking correctly. Maybe it's AI. Who knows, Matt? I don't know, but gonna stay tuned and hopefully try to start a career as a professional royal watcher. That's the kind of career I've always aspired to have.
As an official royal watcher. Yeah.
I'd like to be a professional royal watcher and just hang outside of Buckingham Palace. I did it one time. But get the binoculars out and just watch.
Yeah.
And wait for the scandal, which seems to happen a lot.
Sure. Yeah. No, makes sense. I mean, it's kind of getting back to your roots. You're from near Charlotte, right? Isn't Charlotte
City of
royal?
The Queen?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes, Queen Charlotte in Bridgerton.
In Bridgerton.
Charlotte of Mecklenburg.
Are we going to have to do Bridgerton breakdowns when that premieres again?
Yeah, we got to bring Dr. Heiser on here and do some Bridgerton breakdowns.
Okay, we'll give it a shot.
She was
German,
Mecklenburg.
Oh, really? Britain.
Yeah, because that's the problem with the royal. Hold on, so, dang it! I am a royal watcher. That's the problem with the royals. They can only marry other royals, so the dating pool is pretty small. And the thing that was really helpful in like the 1700s, 1800s. Was that Germany wasn't unified. And so there are all these small, like, kingdoms, and so they all had princes and princesses. Whereas, in England, there was just one, maybe two, if Scotland was doing its thing. Germany was the place to go. Germany was the royal Tinder of its day.
Royal Tinder of its
that's,
day.
That's how you get Catherine the Great. She's German. Because they needed to find a spouse for, what was her husband's name? The Great, the son of, she was the Catherine the Great. Her father-in-law was a big deal. I'll look it up while you're talking.
Yep, you are already a royal watcher, clearly.
It turns out. Oh, gosh. Who did she marry? Peter. Yeah, Peter the Great.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
son the Great, the son of Peter the Great is who she married and then deposed, overthrew, and became empress.
Well, speaking of Peter.
Oh, God.
We're talking about a different kind of Peter and a different kind of royalty.
The meme was the meme about what was that about?
Let me tell you who else emerged.
And everybody thought she had died.
Wow. Well, yeah, here we are. We're on Easter Sunday. Shall we talk about it? Are you preaching this Easter Sunday?
No, I'm not. I don't even know where I'm going to be. It's amazing.
Good on you. Wow.
My Easter plans haven't been pinned down. There's been some slight familial pressure applied that I had forgotten might exist. My grandmother reminded me that she has an Easter lunch.
No.
We're invited to make, if we can. That's the qualifier on the end of it. And I can't think more than a couple days out. So I'd not thought of Easter occurring in my life. But now I'm aware it is. And so I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Well, so are you not flying to Los Angeles for 24 hours this year?
Hey, if I told you, it wouldn't be a surprise.
That happened once to your listeners. That happened.
If you become an Anabaptist and rebaptize your children, I will be there, man.
Oh, it's incredible. Incredible. Well, I am preaching on Easter Sunday. And I made myself a note this year. This is my 13th year of preaching on Easter Sunday. And I finally made myself a note to remind myself that Easter Sunday is a really weird day to preach. Because it's a really
weird one. Yeah.
Strange community that you're preaching to. Here's what I mean, right? Like, so you would think, like, oh, obvious good news, Christ is risen. Like, this is like the basic good news of our faith. But the thing that I always forget is that, like, Easter Sunday, you're not typically preaching to your usual church community. Yeah. So all the things that, like, would normally work when you're like, oh, I know the levers to pull, I know how we can, like, have a conversation together. Oftentimes preaching is part of a conversation between you and your congregation. And maybe it'll be a little bit on Easter, but mostly it's not, because probably more than half the people in my car that are going to be there are not the people that are there every week, which just makes for a really different experience of preaching. You might be like, great, full crowd. That's great. That's great. But I have also experienced, like, trying to tell some of my jokes. I'm pretty good at jokes, Zach. I don't know if you know. I'm like a bit of a jokester.
People
aren't always, you know, people can get queued up just like, you know, every once in a while, I'll see it coming when you'll do one of your wind-up stories. And but people in my congregation, they kind of know, okay, he's going in this direction. Huh? But when a crowd of strangers, they're like, is he joking? Like, is that, like, what's happening? You know, we're not on the same wavelength. And so it's almost like you're preaching to strangers. It's sort of similar to, I imagine, like, when you would go out and preach to congregations as a guest preacher, right? Like, you almost have to think about it in that way a little bit. And I always forget that piece. And then the other thing that is so strange about it for me is that I have just spent the previous week at church almost 24/7 and probably having a lot of really great, like, it's stressful, it's a lot, but I've also probably had a lot of really great experiences. It's a mountaintop experience of the church year. So having a lot of great interactions with people, doing a lot of fun stuff. And then you get to Sunday morning and most of those people did not experience all that stuff that you just experienced, which is really weird. Also a really weird thing. I'm riding high on all these experiences and most people there have not participated in any of it. Not everybody, there's always, you know, but percentage wise, you're preaching to a very different community.
Yeah.
And so that just always makes it like a really different framing. And I'm at least this year, I feel prepared for it after a dozen years of doing it. I finally realized
it's even different from Christmas Eve, where you got some similar dynamics, but maybe it's different.
It's that's a really good question. And I guess you're right, it's similar. And I think that maybe the difference off the top of my head, the difference is like it's between night and morning, right? Where like at a Christmas Eve, I can do a kind of minor key thing. So it's a similar move, but I guess for me, like it's sometimes a little bit easier to get to get there on a Christmas Eve. There's like enough other, whereas like the other thing you have on an Easter morning is that like the sun is shining. You got a lot of pressure to like be joyful. Like you gotta just bring the joy. This is not the time to like preach your downer of a sermon, you know, like, maybe any Sunday is the time to preach it, but you know, like I always feel like a bit of pressure too. I've got to like meet there's a particular energy that you're trying to meet that I find a little bit easier to meet on a Christmas Eve and a little bit more, not that it's impossible, but it's a different kind of energy to get to. And when you prefer complex emotions, it can be challenging, but yes, it's a little bit similar, but also its own thing.
I wonder if people are a little more dialed in at Easter because there's less like going to church on Christmas Eve can be a part of the Christmas checklist, right? Of like, here's the things that need to happen at Christmas.
Yeah.
Which is loosely religious these days, you know, whereas I don't think people have the kinds of folks for whom going to church on Sunday morning, Easter, who fall into that, like, and I mean this in a non-derogatory manner, the casuals, right? The kind of casuals who have going to church on Sunday morning, on Easter, on their checklist. There's less just like cultural water flowing, right? And more intentionality towards the religious stuff, maybe? That's what I'm trying to get at, guessing. Does that make sense?
On Easter, more intentionality toward the religious stuff?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Like, the Easter Bunny's not coming on Sunday night or Monday morning. Like, theoretically, Easter church is the apex of the Easter experience for everybody, whereas
Apex Mountain,
sure that's the people's experience at Christmas. Is that, maybe that's a better way to frame it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, the thing the hook in what you were saying there, like the receptivity that people may have, that reminds me of funeral preaching, right? Where sometimes I find funeral preaching, mm-hmm. like, it's sort of rich. It's like rich soil for preaching, but it's sort of like we're dialed in, I guess is the word that you use, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a sense in which people are dialed in. And so we can speak to this common thing that we have on this particular day. And at a funeral, we're dialed in the common thing of grief. And oftentimes I'll poke into that with celebrating life with some humor. You can like get there, but we're dialed in a particular way. And grief is the common denominator, with which is also going to be tied up with sort of a Thanksgiving and celebration. And on Easter, it's a similar move, I think, right? Like people are dialed in, but like we're all there to be in our Easter best, take some pictures, feel great about springtime. You know, maybe we don't all get the theology, but we're there to feel good about something, maybe. Some of us came because our families made us do it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some common experience of like, what can we celebrate? What can we feel good about this morning? And there is a dialed in-ness around that. And so you can take that, I think, and do something with it. And maybe we'll talk about that in relation to these texts.
Speaking of the texts, Matt.
Yeah,
what text,
I mean,
you want to talk about? You got options.
I'm sure everybody's going to preach on Peter's sermon.
Absolutely.
Because that's super helpful. So we've got Acts chapter 10. We've got Isaiah 25, which has some really nice imagery about the mountain. But to be honest, these are probably few people are going to preach on these. They might be there in your bulletin. Maybe you're going to read them if you do all the readings. On Easter, I typically just do the gospel. We typically just go straight there and be done with it and cut out the other stuff.
Heretics.
I know. But that's typically what we do. So can we read both of these gospel options?
Yeah.
All right, let's do that. So you got two options. You got John 21 to 18, which I typically will read at the Easter Vigil, but sometimes on a Sunday morning. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to him, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Then Peter and the other disciple set out and went toward the tomb. And the two were running together, and the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. And he bent down to look in, and he saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he didn't go in. And then Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb. And he saw the linen wrappings lying there and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. And then the other disciple, who reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and he believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. And the disciples returned to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. And she wept. She bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. And they said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" And she said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I don't know where they have laid him." She said to them, And when she had said this, she turned around and she saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know it was Jesus. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and say to them, I have been sending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Christ.
Good, stuff. Yeah, that's a good one. It's pretty good.
We're unable to vigil, you know, very fleshed out story for the Sunday morning crowd.
Yeah, I like using it at the vigil. While it's still dark, always fits that nicely. Love the piece about the name. One of the best ideas I ever had was to go out. We process outside, still dark outside, you know, we're gathered, and we start reading the gospel, and I had them turn the lights on. Usually you turn the lights on when you read the gospel, and I waited until Jesus said the word Mary, and then had them turn the lights on unexpectedly, and it worked, Zach, it worked! Such a good idea. I still celebrate it every year. Such a good idea. But it really highlights, I think, in this text, like just how important that moment is where Jesus names her.
Did a little word study, Matt, because I hit a word in John's gospel here that realized I hadn't heard much of in the old New Testament, and it was gardener, supposed him to be the gardener. And so I was like, what are some other occurrences of gardener? And Matt? There are none. This is the only usage in the Greek New Testament of the word gardener, though wow. It means like garden watcher, almost a royal watcher, garden watcher. And the word for garden does appear. It actually appears in chapter 19 in a little line that in the Passion or on Good Friday you're going to read, but not hear probably, that says that there was a garden nearby and the garden had a tomb in it. And so that's where the tomb, I'd never really thought about that, right? Jesus gets buried in a garden. So if you're going to the tomb, you're like, there's a garden. Well, that's probably the gardener because we're in a garden. And I never thought about that before, Matt, or considered it or knew it, that the tomb is in a garden. And my traditional, provocative move to make it Easter is that Jesus isn't there, especially if you're kind of, do the Mark thing, right? Everybody will get your arm twisted to show up. Your grandmother's going to call you, tell you to come to church. But Jesus can't be bothered to come to church. It's just empty tomb when you get there, right? So that's a fun thing to play with, right? On Jesus' biggest day, he's not here.
I've told that line to people every single day in my preaching class this week. Jesus doesn't even show up. So I've stolen it from you, Zach. Can't I know. It's a good one. It's a good line.
Please do. Footnote it, but let's steal it. The other side of that coin is Jesus here in John, is resurrected, but then he's just hanging out in the garden.
Doesn't he have stuff to do? Right?
There's some, he'll get around, you know, but I feel like fight or flight would kick in for me post resurrection. I would be getting far away from the death place, right? But Jesus is hanging out in the garden, and maybe there's some something interesting to do here if you want to flip Gethsemane to that garden to this garden. So Jesus had some not great experiences in gardens recently. But here's this post-resurrection garden. The garden's redeemed. Jesus is doing some gardening. I don't know, Matt. The Gardens strike me. Don't want to brag, but I recently became a member of a church, Matt. That's new for me. Haven't been a member, official on the rolls member of a Lutheran church since 2011. But here I am.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I finally found one that will let me in. And been attending their midweek deals pretty regularly, and they got these small group things. And our question recently, or last week, a couple days ago, was what's the deal with heaven? And so people, part of the image, like people were encouraged to struggle with coming up with some imagery for heaven. And I don't know about heaven itself, but here's like this garden image is a post-resurrected life image, I think could work, especially, you know, as a spring festival, celebrating spring coming. Lots of stuff, lots of good soil to till.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 No, it's really good. The other piece I haven't been able to figure out what to do with, but it's always striking to me. We were having a conversation earlier about running. There's some running in this text, Zach, mm-hmm. and it's super weird. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like there's some meaning to it. The author of this text had some intention when he was writing it, and I do not know what it is.
But there, the disciple very fast. That was needed to be passed down over the millennia.
I mean, there's several sentences about running. They're running together, and then other disciple and Peter got there first, but they didn't go in. And then Peter came and followed him in. There's some running around, but then there's some passing, and he got there first, and he got there second. And it's I don't quite know what to do with that. But it's happening. And there's some running in the other gospel texts, in different in the synoptics as well. And so I'm always struck by that, although I don't yet know what to do with it. So if you figure it out, listeners, let me know.
There you go. Well, let's see if we got any run in here. Mark 16, when the Sabbath was over, you don't get while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint Jesus. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, you get a little bit of timekeeping there. They went to the tomb. And when they'd been saying to one another, who will roll away the stone for us to the entrance to the tomb? And when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee, and there you will see him just as he told you. And so they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Oh, it's the gospel of the Lord, and it's just a killer way to end an Easter reading, man. It's so good. You get two options here, Matt. Like, you want Jesus to show up, read John. You want no Jesus. Such disparate visions of what the resurrected, post-resurrection life looks like.
So there's a lot going on Easter Sunday, and it sounds like we got a lot of different options and different ways of telling the story from different gospel writers, and also different characters within this story. So here's my good news for this Sunday, because guess what, Zach? I did it a week ahead of time. I already got it. I got my good news already.
Dang! Are you done?
Well, I got 600 words of a sermon, man. Like, I'm getting there. I've almost got it. I don't know that I got the pithiness down yet, but what I want to say is that, so I'm preaching on the, I'm really a heretic this year because following Signified Art, I'm preaching on Luke, where he actually asks, why do you look for the living among the dead? And so my good news is that Jesus is among the living. But what I'm going to do is focus on the different characters in the story and talk about how each one of them has a place in this story. So, like, if you are running in if you are running in fear, like these, if you're faithful and showing up like these women do at the beginning of this Mark story, if you're one of the faithful ones, you're here all the time, right? Like you could, there's a way to tell that story. Resurrection is for you. But if you are not feeling it this morning, if you are fleeing away from all this stuff in whatever way that looks like for you, guess what? Resurrection is for you too. And to just kind of piece out all these different people that are in here and to think about how they're all wrapped up in this story. The story would not be complete without any one of them. So even though Jesus doesn't show up in a way that we can see necessarily in this Luke gospel, it seems like he's off screen. And yet I think he is already stirring things up within this community in some different ways. He's already present in the community, stirring things up. So that's what I got, Zach. Jesus among the living. He's already here, even if we can't see him. Because I'm stuck by that too, that he doesn't even show up to his own party, which just got me thinking, like, what are the ways that he actually is already here now? Which I think will resonate Sunday morning in 2024.
I like that, Matt. That's the inverse of like the good news I was thinking, like on your running, is that you got all these people running around. Jesus is not running around, is the distinction, right? Like, and as someone who does too much running around, good news is always that you don't have to run around, even though I rarely take that seriously. But I like the other side, that he's stirring, that's Jesus stirring things up.
Because that's where I struggled. I spent half the week wanting to preach about how we're running to resurrection. And I was like, it's alliterative. You know, you get stuck on something that's alliterative and it just doesn't.
Once it's alliterative, it's done.
But I was like, dang, it just doesn't, what am I supposed to do? But I think, I'm going to talk about that Luke gospel, which we just talked about John and Mark, but I still think it preaches whichever you're using. Is that like in that text, the women show up faithfully at the beginning, the men don't believe them, but there's going to be good news for them too. Like they're going to get pulled into this thing too. And then Peter takes off, I'm counting on my fingers. Peter takes off running in that story as well. And he's running around, right? He's running, hands up into the tomb. Peter's kind of all over the place. But it's also like, there's good news for that too. Like if you're sort of all over the place, if you're bouncing back and forth, if you're like my kids and can't sit still, like guess what? There's resurrection for you too. You're part of this story too. Like there's room for all of these different people within this story. And it's just super weird to me that I feel like the reason I think that that's good news in that story, why that is where my focus is because like, I just think it's so striking that these stories are about the people that were looking for Jesus and not Jesus himself. Like you could imagine a different way of telling the story. That's like, here's what happened to Jesus. The sinews started to come together. It's like that dry bone story. And then he got up and he broke down that door and the stone, he rolled away the stone. And now here he is walking around. The story, you would think, like if you were a screenwriter, you would tell this story about Jesus and what Jesus was doing. But that is not what the story is. The story is about what the disciples and the followers. Yeah, it's about what the followers of Jesus are doing that day, which is a wild choice, right? Unless you think that like Jesus is actually in the midst of that.
I like it, Matt. You've convinced me. I like the door you can go in with the Marys and Salome. Like they didn't like get the text message that like, oh, something's going down, like emergency. Like they're going, I think there's a way to paint it as like they're going to do the thing that they're supposed to do, right? Do their duties. They're going to do a hard thing, I'd imagine, right? Preparing your son's body for after it's died, like for burial is not a thing. I don't think you'd want to do that. And Jesus shows up for like the resurrection comes to them, right? When they go to do the hard thing they don't want to do.
It's Easter for you. What, good luck preaching preachers on this strange Sunday when we have what we think is a core text. It is a core text of our faith. And yet, just a strange day to preach. I just think it's strange. Good luck, preachers. You got this. What are we listening to as we prepare to preach?
Well, Matt, I don't know about their sermons, but they're definitely going to have the jams. Shout out before we do the playlist to Andrew Tingwall, who is now like buddy buddies with Rob Harvilla, because he played part of 60 songs in church and contacted Rob to get permission, and Rob allowed it, and then Rob retweeted it and stuff today. So I'm very jealous, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, Lutheran pastor in the Great White North, Minnesota.
Well, I imagine one thing you might be listening to during, as you prepare to preach, Beyonce going to drop a new album on Good Friday. She's taking over Good Friday. Used to it was Coachella at first. Now it's Good Friday. Cowboy Carter being released March 29th. But it's not out yet, so I don't have any songs from that. Although I still think that song with the banjo player is good. It's really good. Instead, I'm going to go with running songs. So we're going to do Gorillaz featuring Adelie Omotayo. Silent Running. It's so catchy, isn't it? It's like it's such a good little groove.
That Cold Cracker Island album, like, I missed it. Yeah. Like I even after having seen them in concert, you could have told me that album came out 5 years ago. And I've been like, oh, I bet. Yeah. But it's 2023 album. And it's just all like, it's all really good. And it's full of songs that you would be like, oh, the Gorillaz must have done that like right after they did like Clint Eastwood and stuff. But like, no, this is evidently a reference. I was looking at that one for the playlist too, Matt. Evidently a reference to submarines. Because there's a lot of submarine imagery in the videos and stuff for that. In Melancholy Hill and stuff, like the whole album has a lot of submarine stuff. But, you know, submarines, like to be undetected by like sonar and stuff, will sometimes do quiet, silent running is what they call it, right? Where you don't make noise and stuff.
And then, gosh, what other song should I pick on here? I'm going to do Whitney Houston, Run to You. Whitney Houston, Run to You from the Bodyguard soundtrack. That showed up on my playlist. So good. Give you a little bit different vibe than the rock we usually put on here. And then finally, go with U2, Trying to Throw Your Arms Around the World, which has this refrain at the end. I'm going to run to you, run to you, run to you. Be still, be still. Which I think gets at some of the stuff that you were talking about earlier. So Jesus waits for us. We are run to Jesus.
No Tracy Chapman, huh?
No Tracy Chapman this week. What do you got?
I'm going down to the garden, Matt, because there are a ton of good garden songs. And I'm going to start you off with a great track off of Punisher, Phoebe Bridgers' sophomore release. It's got a great song, and it's a little creepy, so I like it. Someday I'm going to live in the house up on the hill. And when your skinhead neighbor goes missing, I'll plant a garden in the yard. And then they start talking about the Rose Bowl parade. It's implying that there's a body in the garden, which, you know, as a green burial proponent, more tombs in gardens. It's the what Jesus would have us to do. Then, Matt, just as the sun rises, a gardener's there awfully early. Matt, might you say he's been doing a little gardening at night, Matt, off of Chronic Town. One of the first real REM singles to hit, Gardening at Night. I'm mostly familiar with
it. Wow, a song from the Really Excellent Men.
I came to know it mostly through Eponymous, which is their best of the IRS years, because that was the way to save the moolah when you're buying off of the Columbia House, is to get the best of instead of all the albums. Last, man, but not least, it's a song that I've really fell in love with, that I didn't know about until the past couple of years. Richard Nelson, went by Ricky, played a concert at Madison Square Garden with lots of old bigwigs of like the late 50s were there. And Ricky Nelson came out and he played the song. Everybody loved it, that he was really famous for from the 50s. Then he started playing some new stuff and he got booed, Matt, for playing new stuff. And so we wrote a song about it called Garden Party. And it's a song all about how he got booed at Madison Square Garden. And it's got this great line. No one recognized me. I didn't look the same, but it's all right. You can't please everybody, but you've got to please yourself. So there you go. A song about a garden party where they don't recognize you. Ricky Nelson's Garden Party. And it is a jam. It's so good.
Good stuff. Good playlist for Easter. Gardening, running. That's it. It's risen indeed.
Booyah.
It's been real.
Real vinyl.